This episode of WDW Today is being sponsored by TouringPlans.com. You know what I love about TouringPlans.com? Its ability to get me to see everything and do everything I want to see without waiting in long lines. I mean, you know, you're going down through the family. My daughter doesn't like waiting in long lines. My daughter doesn't like a lot of things, but waiting in long lines is on the top of her list. And when I use TouringPlans.com, I get around those really long lines. I see everything I want to see, and I don't have to wait a long time to do it. In fact, you can as well. Also, we've got a special deal just for you, our podcast listeners. Use discount code ZUZU2014, ZUZU2014, and you will save 21% off, too. Check them out right now, TouringPlans.com.
Bringing the world to your world, this is Walt Disney World Today. Here are Mike Scopa, Len Testa, Mike Newell, and your host, Matt Hochberg.
It's Monday, September 15th, 2014, and this is episode 1396 of WDW Today. I'm Matt Hochberg of StudioCentral.com and RoyalCaribbeanBlog.com. Joining me on today's show is Len Testa, co-author of The Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World, and he's also the host of the Disney Dish with Jim Hill podcast. Welcome to the show, Len.
How's it going, Matt?
Outstanding. Hey, Len, I was doing the optimize my touring plan thing for my upcoming trip, and boy, your system thinks I'm like the worst planner ever, because we're like trying to curtail our plans towards my daughter, so we can't do a lot of things. She's shorter than 40 inches. So it's like, so we keep on putting this up, and they're like, you really should get like a fast pass for, you know, insert thrill ride here. And it's like, yeah, I know that, but we're not going to do that because she's not going to ride that. Yeah, but you really should put one in here.
You could, try doing child swap. It'll tell you. It might change it.
Cool.
On the right hand side, there's a child swap option.
Oh, okay, cool.
There you go.
Also joining us on today's show, Mike Scopa, a blogger for touringplans.com, and he's also the podcast co-host at the Mickey Mouse podcast. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Really smooth. You know, usually I'll do a podcast opening or I'll do a shout out, but America is really curious. So I'm going to pose a question to the two of you. And I know Len's not on Facebook, so he did not see my post yesterday. But are you guys ready? I want to take a poll.
It's Anna.
Anna or Elsa? Yeah. Len?
Anna.
Anna or Elsa what?
Marianne or Ginger?
Oh, thank you. And would you say, Matt?
I said Anna.
Yeah, me too.
The best answer of the day was from Brian Thompson. He said Maelstrom.
Maelstrom. Yeah,
nice. Yeah. Nice. Well, on today's show, we're talking about Len's recent research trip, really, because he did a lot of work on this trip. This wasn't so much see and do stuff as it was just, you know, simply you're getting down to do some work there. And I know that you actually had, you're working in tandem, in fact. At least I know of at least one other person who was working for you, Brian McNichols, who was doing some very tough research. In fact, the toughest of all, bar research.
Bar research, that's right. So we
Woe is him.
Yeah, so Brian's updating his fabulous Walt Disney World bars book. And so we were decided to go down there and test out the drinks on the standard bar menu. We also did a couple of other things. We stayed at Wilderness Lodge. They've recently redone their rooms, so we got photos of those rooms. Laurel hadn't been on Seven Dwarves. I did a complete round of Epcot menu updates. We did some other things too. So it was a lot of during the day. We essentially didn't stop working, and then at night we didn't stop drinking. It was that kind of trip. Met some great people too. Some people from the Touring Plans community. It was a lot of fun. Cool. Yeah, but the bar menu was super interesting, because normally when I go to a bar, I generally don't order from the standard bar menu. One of the things that Brian was able to get was a copy of the mixing guide, like how you, the recipe book, for Disney's drinks. So we were going through the recipes and decided that it was time to go back and look at the actual drinks that come out of this recipe book, because some of the recipes were fairly interesting. So we did. So we got in there Thursday night, and we ended up going to Territory Lounge just to watch the Steelers get beat up. And so I was we had a couple of appetizers there, and I watched the Steelers get trounced. I think I had a beer because I wasn't ready to start drinking yet. But so here's a couple of interesting things off the bar menu. So you guys know that the Disney bar menu is greatly simplified, right?
Yes. And when you say, Len, when you say you don't order off the bar menu, what do? Just make up drinks or ask for sarsaparilla?
No, but like a gin and tonic, which is not on the standard bar menu. Right, like something like that, or you know, yeah. So something that isn't on the standard bar menu, and I'll tell you why in a second. But yeah. So I'll typically order something like that.
You know, Len, you may want to clear up for those who haven't been down there. Like when you go to a lounge, and I think there's, I don't know if this is what you're alluding to. There's a little book that has all the drinks.
Yeah. Good point. So the vast majority of bars and lounges in Walt Disney World. Use what's called the standard bar menu, and it's one booklet of all the drinks served all across Walt Disney World, and it's in the same format with the same set of drinks pretty much everywhere from, you know, Animal Kingdom Lodge all the way over to, you know, the All-Star Resorts, and it's no matter where you go, you see the same pictures and the same drink descriptions and made with the same recipes, and there's no specializing. It's all the same set of drinks. So it's sort of like the Sears catalog of drinks. There are a handful of bars that don't use the standard bar menu where the bartenders are free to come up with their own set of drinks. So Misner's Lounge at the Grand Floridian, typically the high-end, the premium places, all get to use their own menus. Or they have specialty drinks. And a specialty menu to go along with that. So they'll offer the standard bar menu, but they'll add liquors that you can't get elsewhere. So cognacs at the Grand Floridian or champagnes elsewhere, things like that. But for the most places you go, pretty much all the values, all the moderates, some of the deluxes, you're going to get the standard bar menu, which means you'll get the same drink at Territory Lounge that you'll get at Old Key West. No differentiation. The thing that they change are really the appetizers. So we went to test out to see how good the drinks are on the standard bar menu. And let me just preface this by saying, by giving you this recipe. So the recipe is for, sangria, the red superfruit sangria. Mm-hmm. You can tell by how complicated the recipe is, how good the drink is going to be. You ready?
Okay.
The recipe is open box of sangria, pour in glass, garnish.
I think the Big Mac is harder to put together than that thing.
The Big Mac actually has more assembly steps. It's So we started going through the standard bar menu, and there's like 40 drinks. So we got over. It took us 2 days, two nights, and then we invited 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Maybe 15, 20 people, you know, to share in the drinks. And Laurel had come up with an app to rate all the drinks on a variety of things, like, you know, is it too sour? Is it too sweet? What's the predominant flavor? Besides alcohol, what else do you taste? You know, what kind of garnish is it? How much effort does it look like went into the drink? You know, value for the money, stuff like that. So Laurel did this really cool Google Doc form, and we all had our cell phones out to rate it. But it was... In a word, it was depressing. There's not a single drink on that menu that I would order again. And I've got to tell you, I would probably order the pina colada, which is sort of like a raspberry blended drink. But other than that, every single drink was pretty much the same, whether it was a tropical mojito or the habanero lime margarita, or one of the martinis. All the drinks that involve fruit are way too sweet. There's absolutely no subtlety about any of the flavors whatsoever. I really believe this. I honestly believe this is true. Disney puts the most attractive drinks on the pictures in the menu because mm-hmm. that's what they think people are going to order. It's based entirely on what's pretty. But there wasn't a single drink in there that I thought was balanced. I mean, most drinks, it was like, you know what sour mix is? The stuff that obviously tastes sour. But yeah. It's sort of like the fruit juice base of a lot of drinks. Every drink was some variation on sour mix, you know, some alcohol, whether it's gin or vodka or tequila or rum or whatever, fruit garnish, and maybe just a splash of, you know, blended fruit juice or whatever. Every drink was exactly like that. I mean, very few exceptions.
Yeah, well, of course, and it makes sense, Len. I mean, I don't like it, but I mean, it makes sense because, after all, it's cheaper that way. If they can essentially make the same drink no matter what people order, they don't have to order
it. Not only is it so standardized, but like none of the fruit juices are fresh. They're all mixes or concentrates, and it's different at the signature bars where they can use fresh juices and stuff. But everything comes from a can or a bottle. I mean, there's nothing original about it, and it's all depressing and bad. After like the first five drinks, I was like, okay, and we're sipping these, right? Well, I've already individual straws. We're taking like, you know, one or two sips, and we're sort of passing these drinks around. And I'm like, all of my tasting notes are like sour, 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 not a sour, sour, sour. You know, it was all the same thing. And it was, you know, granted they were different colors and they put, you know, glow cube, fake ice cubes in them, or they changed the garnish, or it was in a different shaped glass. It was all the same kind of drink. The other thing that I can't figure this out for the life of me. Sometimes we order two of the same drink. So one of them was, have you ever had the truffle oil martini?
No.
So it's, I'm pretty sure it's vodka, but hold on one second. Let me look it up. Yeah, so it's a double crust vodka, or it's vodka, vermouth, and then olives soaked in truffle oil. Scope, have you ever had this?
I don't think I have. That's everywhere, or is just in certain?
It's everywhere. It's on the standard bar.
Never had that one, no.
So we ordered two of them. One of them, it was like, you know, the juice in the bottle of olives?
Yeah.
It was like drinking that. So it was so oily and so olivey. I'm like, I don't taste the vodka, and I don't think this is very balanced. The other one, I swear to God, was all vodka. Could not taste. I'm like, is this the truffle oil? Because I can't taste any truffles. They're like, oh, they're in the olives. I'm like, really? Because I can't taste anything. If you would have taken two drinks, both drinks, mixed them in a glass, it probably would have been balanced. Wow. But they were just, it was from the same bartender, ordered at the same time.
Yeah.
Two completely different drinks. It was frustrating.
It's,
I mean,
it's sad because years ago they used to have a much more diversified menu, and that would mean different experiences in different places. I mean, the pool bars were always like the pool bars, but you could get different bars would have like, you know, really unique drink experiences. Kind of like to the point where people used to be like, oh, you need to go explore the different bars to see stuff. But now the drink menu has been universalized and pardon the pun, watered down.
Yeah.
And so the result is we get this just homogenized drink menu. It's like you're saying, Len, it's like there's stuff on there, different things on there, but essentially it's all the same thing, and it's all like mass produced stuff, right? It's all like, Bloody Marys, I'm sure, come out of a Bloody Mary mix. The margaritas, I'm sure, come out of a a margarita mix. There's nothing.
Yeah, it's all premixed. There's nothing is made there. Actually, you mentioned the Bloody Marys. Brian, we have to have him on the show. There's apparently a flight of Bloody Marys over at Dawa Bar at the Animal Kingdom. So at 9 o'clock one morning, he dutifully trundled over there and drank five Bloody Marys. He was giving them away to people too. But one of them has beef jerky in them.
Yeah, that sounds disgusting.
Yeah, he was like, that was actually the least bad of them. I'm like, the beef jerky one was the least bad of them? He's like, yeah. I'm like, I'm very sorry for you. But yeah, okay. So the only drink that I would recommend on the standard bar menu is the pina colada. It's Bacardi rum with pina colada mix. And raspberry puree. Essentially, it's a raspberry smoothie with alcohol, and that's, I guess, that requires enough effort that make it better. But there's literally nothing on that menu that I would if you want to order something, you know, order yourself a martini or a classic drink like a Manhattan, and specify the liquors that you want in it. I do not order from the standard bar menu.
Wow.
The other thing that was weird was. And I don't know when this happened, but when did flatbreads take over Walt Disney World?
Oh, my friend, like three to 5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I think I noticed that.
Everywhere I went, it was like, oh, we've got a buffalo chicken flatbread. We've got a vegetarian flatbread. Oh, yeah. We've got a meat lover's flatbread. I'm like,
cheap to make, and
that was it. That was the amazing thing. So the first night at Territory Lounge, we had pulled pork nachos, which were a huge portion, and they weren't bad. They could have been more spicy. They weren't spicy at all, and it had cranberry on it, which is strange, and pear.
Spicier?
It wasn't. It could have been much spicier. It was not much more spicy. It was not. Thank you, Mr. Grammar Person.
Anytime, buddy. I'm here for you.
And then we ordered one of the flatbreads. Then the next night we were at the Wave, the bar at the Wave. And I think among the five or six of us, we were three different flatbreads. And you know, I had realized at that point. Oh, when we had a flatbread at Pinocchio Village House, and after like, I'm like, dude, three of the last four meals I've had have been flatbreads. What the hell is it? And then everywhere we looked, every menu has flatbreads. But they must scope. But do they make the dough there, or they order out for the dough?
I think it's pre-made. I think all they do is heat it up. You know, my experience as a pizza maker, it's almost like I hate to say this, and I have no proof, but I could almost swear that it had to be defrosted before it had to heat up, because just sometimes you can tell by the texture of something had to be.
That's what I was thinking.
Made, and when something is defrosted or cooked up, there's a difference. There's a crispiness that comes out, which may be good for some people, but it's because when it goes from frozen to defrosted and cooked, there's moisture, and all of a sudden it becomes like. It causes it to become crispy rather than chewy, you know?
So. Yeah. I don't know if we ordered these at the, these flatbreads at the Wave. And I don't know if it's because they're using some sort of weird organic, you know, naturally farmed, ethically harvested grains or whatever, right? At the Wave for their flatbread. But the flatbreads came out, and I swear to God, they were half the size of the flatbreads at Territory Lounge. I'm like, you know, if these are handmade, I understand the inconsistency in the sizing, but if they're really buying these from, you know, the DiGiorno box or whatever, then I don't understand how one is half the size of the other one. I mean, they were decent. Yeah. But it was bizarre. Here's the other bizarre thing of the night. So our server at the Wave used to be a server at Tony's Town Square, and she raved about the food at Tony's Town Square. I'm like, really?
Wow.
Which one of us is drinking again? She's like, no, dude, you really seriously need to try it. And I'm like, really? And apparently the food there is greatly improved. She said it's one of her favorite restaurants in the Magic Kingdom. And she told us some stories about Be Our Guest, which we will share on another show. Yeah. But it was, so then let's see, what else do we do? That was that. So bar research. We went to what's the one next to Yachtsman?
Cruise Club.
The galley. Huh? Yeah, the old galley. Went there. That was actually great. Very good appetizers. They've got like a spicy shrimp, fried shrimp thing there. Truffle fries were really
truffle
well done.
Fries. Very good.
Yeah, very good. And dude, you know how I'm not doing table service in 2014, yep. Right? These dudes from Yachtsman come over, and we're sitting like, you know where there's that window that sort of overlooks the meat locker?
Yes.
We're sitting like right there. They come over and they put the tray of raw steaks and the big lobster and stuff right in front of me. And they're like, oh, New York Strip, Kansas City Strip, you know, prime rib, filet, lobster, right in front of where we're sitting. It was all of you. I hate all of you. Like, you know, 9 months a year, who's going to know the difference, right? It would look really good. But anyway, no, the appetizers there were really good. Same set of drinks, though, over and over. Oh, and the Irish coffee, which we had, which I'm not a big fan of flavored coffees anyway, but it was sad. Nothing was good at all. So my advice, stay away from the standard bar menu, but the appetizers aren't bad, I guess.
Beer. Order beer.
The other thing was I wanted to...
Yeah, the beer wasn't bad, actually.
Nope.
The other thing I wanted to quickly mention was, I know that Lynn, you mentioned to us, was how dead one particular day you were at Epcot, and it was...
Oh, my God.
You've never seen it, right?
Yeah, so was it Friday morning I went to Epcot as I was doing a round of menu collection, a couple of menus we haven't updated in a while. But I walk in, and it was like, what, like 9:40, I mean, it was – I didn't get there at Rope Drop. So first of all, first strange thing is they were playing – I was at the boardwalk. I parked at the boardwalk and I was walking over. But I had to make a detour over to get a photo of something at Dolphin. But as soon as I walked through boardwalk, I could hear Illuminations playing at like – this was like 8:20 a.m. But they were going through the whole thing without the fireworks. It was strange. And I was like, you know, it was the very end of Illuminations. And I'm like, I think I hear this, but I'm not sure if it's, you know, is it the Boardwalk playing it or is it Epcot? But by the time I walked around to the Dolphin, Epcot was playing We Go On. And there's no mistaking that, right? I mean, there's nobody's playing that as background music. Yeah, nobody's choosing that voluntarily. But yeah, they played it for some reason and they opened the park. It was weird. Wow. Anyway, so I get to Epcot. It's like 9:40. I haven't had breakfast yet because all we had done was drink the night before. So I walked over to Boulanger Patisserie, and there are literally four people in World Showcase, and I'm one of the four. And so I ordered a baguette. I had the ham and cheese with butter on it. Oh, my God, that's the best breakfast ever. A bottle of water. And then I actually took it and walked through World Showcase and did what I needed to do and ate my baguette. It was beautiful. I was very happy with it.
So you certainly, this trip, crowd-wise, proved the theory that September is one of the slowest months of the year.
It was beautiful. Oh, yeah. Oh, I also got evac'd off of Ellen's Energy Adventure. I had like half an hour. Laurel's going to meet me over at Epcot. I had like half an hour to kill. Like, okay,
it's called
Divine
Intervention, by the way, Len.
I know, right?
Off that.
So I walked in just as the pre-show was ending. I'm like, okay, this is great. I've got half an hour. This thing is 35 minutes. You know, it'll be great. By the time Laurel gets through bag check, you know, I'll meet her at Spaceship Earth. It'll be great. So we get in, we get to the Big Bang scene, and Bill Nye the Science Guy's like, okay, you know, I better take cover because this is about to happen or whatever he says. And, you know, Ellen's going, the Big Bang, the big, you know, whatever. And
the
then
ding-dang.
The Big Bang, yeah. And then and then it goes, and everything stops, and the lights come on, and it's apparently what they call a turntable fault.
Oh,
like they were spinning us around on the giant turntable, and it stopped, so they evac'd us. And but like no fast passes for Soarin', nothing. It was like, oops, sorry, we give it the old college try, not today. And that was it. So didn't make it over to the studios.
What?
I know. Went over to the Magic Kingdom and that night and rode Seven Dwarves and Pirates and stuff, and it was dead. So,
yeah,
he didn't make it over the studios. Brian made it over the studios. He had lunch at the we should really have Brian on. He had lunch at the Brown Derby lounge. The you know, the outside place.
Yeah, we'll have him on. I'm sure he'll.
And also, he has this great story of he was going to the TuneIn Lounge and he wanted to try some drinks there. And he got there like right at like 10:45, and I guess they opened at 11. But apparently, like, it was him and every other dad in the studios wanting to get a drink at 11 o'clock.
The Disney Junior crowd.
It must have been.
If I hear that "Let It Go" one more time, I'm gonna.
Must have been. It was like,
that's awesome.
You could tell these dads had seen one too many episodes of The Wiggles, and it was dumb. So,
The Wiggles, Len. You're so. I could tell your child is quite old.
I know. And not Sophia the First or anything like that.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. There you go. Anyway. Awesome. Well, Len, as always, we always appreciate your trip reports. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks.
And of course, this episode of WDW Today has been sponsored by TouringPlans.com. And when you want to figure out what's worth your money, what's worth your time, and what's not worth your time and or money, well, of course, TouringPlans.com is the resource for you. They put in hours of real research, just like you've heard here in a small sample size, to figuring out not only where you should go, but where you should eat, where's best to eat, what has the best options, and the best possible vacation for you. Really, that's what it's all about, is giving you the choice that you need. Check them out right now, touringplans.com. Also, we have our next live show scheduled. It's, of course, our live shows are typically the last Sunday of every month, and no change this month. September 28th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time will be our next live show of WDW Today. We want to hope that you'll make it for that. It'll be a lot of fun. More details at WDWToday.com. For Len Testa, Mike Scopa, and Mike Newell, I'm Matt Hotchberg. We'll see you on the next show.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.